This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Ursula Vernon now calls herself a creator of oddities, but she fell into this artistic career completely by accident. Her mother was a professional artist, but the artistic lifestyle never held any mystery or appeal for her. Ursula wanted to be a scientist, and then she took an art class in college. At that point, there was no turning back. She fell in love with artistic work. Ursula is now the author of a long-running text and graphic novel series called Dragon Breath. The series is aimed at young readers. She has also written an award-winning adult comic called Digger. And she recently released her first full-length novel for middle-grade readers called Castle Hangnail. And she joins me now to talk about it. Ursula Vernon, welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you here.
Hi, Frank. Glad to be here.
Let's just talk about this background a little bit, because you majored in anthropology, right?
I did, yes. And I regret nothing.
Well, that's good. But go back to this, because your mom was an artist. You're a graphic novelist now.
Yes.
You draw pictures for a living. Your mother was an artist, and you want to know part of it.
Well, it's the usual thing. You grow up with something, there's absolutely no mystery involved. So I thought, you know, you had no money and weird friends. And it turned out I was right.
What's wrong with that? So that... Turns out you were right.
Yeah, but it turned out I actually wanted the weird friends. And so, you know, it worked out.
All right. Well, so it did work out. You're doing this wonderful stuff now. What turned it for you? Talk about that art class and how that turned it around for you.
My mother had been telling me, take an art class in college and I will stop bothering you about it. And I took an art class in college, and she's been very good. She has not said I told you so for nearly a decade. And it turned out I was much better at that than I was at anything else I was doing. And I realized that I wasn't sure if it was what I wanted to do, but it seemed to be the only thing I was good at. So at that point, I was so far along in an anthropology degree, I just finished it off. But I didn't actually want to go live anywhere with lack of plumbing and my archaeology professor was very good and also discouraged us from virtually any archaeology we might be doing.
Well, I think that's the great thing about archaeology. You can do it and realize how primitive primitively you could live. And if you don't want that, then find another career.
Yes.
And you did. She has told others she told you so. She's just not told you, by the way.
No, she did tell me for the first few years, but she stopped now.
So you write mostly for middle grade readers, right? Tell us how you came to write for that group.
It was largely by accident. My agent called me up, and I got the agent also by accident. I hadn't actually written a book, but a friend of mine who is a romance author who is local, Sabrina Jeffries, was telling a story about a strange artist friend of hers at a dinner once, and there was an agent sitting next to her and said, does she do graphic novels? Because those are really hot right now. And she said, yeah, I think she does. So she called me up and said, do you want a literary agent? And since I had no idea that what one was or what one did or that they were difficult to get, I said, sure, what the heck? And she has not let me live that down. But the agent had looked at all the artwork I had online, and which had little weird captions I had been writing under them, and was like, can you write a children's book? And I said, yes, that seems like a thing I could do. And she said, okay. And then I thought, oh, man, because I was working as a professional illustrator at the time, and deadlines are basically you live from deadline to deadline. And I thought, oh, man, how long can I take to write this book so she won't get tired of waiting for it? How long does it take to write a book? It can't take that long to write a children's book. So I said, can I have 6 weeks? And she said, well, why don't you take 8? And so I wrote it in 6 weeks and sent it in because I wanted the 2 weeks to make revisions because that was how I was used to doing art. And
was that Dragon Breath?
That was actually Nurk. That was my my first children's book, which sank like a stone, as is life. But
you have to write a bad book before you can write a good one.
I think it was a good book. It was just the company kind of went into Chapter 11 and reorged afterwards and was bought. And my editors all got different jobs while they were working on the book. But one of them went and bought the Dragon Breath books when she went to Penguin. So
tell us about that series. We'll get to your latest book in a second. But I do want to hear, this is the graphic novel series.
Yes.
And tell us how that got started and who these characters are.
Well, Dragon Breath is a story about Danny Dragon Breath, who is a little dragon, and he goes to a school for reptiles and amphibians. So all of his classmates are lizards and snakes and frogs, and his best friend's an iguana. And nobody knows he's really a mythical dragon because he's not very good at breathing fire yet. And I started it because I was thinking about, you know, kids who don't fit in at school. But I also, I don't like drawing humans. So all of my things where I have to draw a whole bunch of illustrations are reptiles in this one. We have a series coming out later this year called Hamster Princess, and they're all rodents. And I didn't want to draw humans. I was thinking, well, dragons are fun. I could draw dragons, but if everyone at school is a dragon, how does he not fit in? So then I started thinking about a school where they would think that he was one of the various lizard species that are called dragons, like Komodo dragons or water dragons, but he would actually be a real honest-to-goodness dragon. And it started from there. I did a couple of pages that had scurvy jokes and pirates and sent it in, and somehow they bought two books. I still don't know how that happened, but I'm glad they did.
Well, that's the thing. You got a drawer full of scurvy jokes sitting there, and you think, well, how can I use these?
Well,
and
really,
the graphic novel shows up. Well, speaking of drawer full of things, how many of these, you talked about the fact that you had been doing illustrations and captioning them. How many of these had you characters had you already created? How many were created for the series?
In theory, all of the characters were created for the series, but I'd actually been drawing weird little lizards for a long time that look a great deal like Danny is and his friends. I just put T-shirts on and little spikes on them. So I had had the basic character design for a long time. Hamster Princess, which I said is coming out later, I had been drawing hamsters for a long time too. So it was just, I'll put a little crown and a jacket on one and... I'm not that original when it comes to books, to characters for the comic books, because I'm going to have to draw them so many times. I usually like a design that I'm already fairly comfortable with. And every time you add a layer of complexity, if you have to draw the character 150 times in a book, it's...
you decide to take some of the... That's going to be a two-pronged crown and not a nine...
yes.
With diadem. So now you've got these characters. The middle school part, I mean, somebody says, can you write a book for kids? You give the right answer, yes. Then you have to figure out how to do it. And that's all good. How did you figure that out?
I don't think I ever did. I just started writing it and handed it over, and they said, this is a middle grade book. And I said, great. I'm not always...
I hope that's not a value judgment. It's not a middle grade value judgment. It's about
Yeah, okay. 8 to 12-year-olds usually is considered middle grade. I have written books that I thought were going to be middle grade books, and I sent them to my agent. She said, hey, no. And then I wound up self-publishing one of those under a pen name, and my editor got to play spot the point at which we realize this is not a children's book.
Well, now, so then these are graphic novels. You've been quite successful with the Dragon Breath. Now you've written a book with a lot of words and just a few pictures in Castle Hangnail. So tell us about this book, first of all.
Castle Hangnail was, it was a lot of fun to write. The premise is that there is a very small, rather run-down castle, and it's full of minions who are a little odd. And they really want an evil overlord to run the castle in the fine old fantasy tradition. You have, you know, the wizard with the dark brooding castle or the mad scientist or whatever. And it doesn't really matter who or what they get as long as they're, you know, a proper master to run the castle. And the problem is they're very dingy and they have no money and the plumbing doesn't work very well. So they can't really attract extremely powerful evil wizards or anything. So what they get is a 12-year-old girl named Molly who really wants to be a wicked witch, but she's pretty polite and she's basically a nice person. So they're a little suspicious of such a young master taking over, and she really falls in love with the castle and wants to take care of it and the minions in it, but they run into a couple of snags along the way.
Will you read for us?
I would love to. This is from the start of Chapter 2, where Molly the Witch has just arrived, and the castle guardian, who resembles Igor a bit, has just opened the door to discover that his new overlord is about 12 years old. What the guardian saw was a plump girl with a round face, a stubborn chin, and frizzy brown hair. She was wearing black boots with metal caps on the end. They were very serious boots. Molly had laced them with purple shoelaces. They looked as if they could kick a hole in a stone wall and have fun doing it. What Molly saw was a very old man in layers of gray rags. Parts of him looked to have been dead for quite some time. He was not naturally a hunchback, but he was making up for it by walking bent over and keeping his shoulders drawn up around his ears. He had scars and sutures and one white, clouded eye. Because he was hunched over and she had on very tall boots, she only had to look up a little to see into his eyes. "You're the Wicked Witch," said the guardian. "Yes," said Molly. She fingered her vulture necklace nervously. Are you sure? Oh, quite sure. The last sorceress had been nearly 6 feet tall, with hair the color of bleached bone and eyes like chips of flint. Molly had brown eyes, and the only way she would ever be 6 feet tall would be if she stood on a stepladder. A wicked witch. Extremely wicked, said Molly. It would curl your hair, how wicked I am. This was purely academic, as the Guardian had not had much hair for at least a century. A wicked witch, though, said the Guardian. Very witchy. Molly tilted her head. I've got loads of silver jewelry. And I like snakes. And toads. I had a pet toad back home. A familiar? Asked the Guardian hopefully. Sure, said Molly. A familiar. Definitely. I don't suppose he's here now. Well, no, said Molly. He had a family and a nice pond in the backyard, and I didn't want to make him unhappy. Mom promised to feed him mealworms every other day, though. One moment, said the Guardian, shutting the door.
There's Ursula Vernon reading from her novel, Castle Hangnail. I like a minion who has to imitate Igor. He's so jealous of the hunchback that he fakes it. That's very cool.
Yeah,
Very cool.
They have a minions guild, and one of them is working on her doctorate in advanced minion studies. So.
Well, this is kind of a wry look. I mean, there's a bit of a parody in this as well, which is it's a cool idea if you think about it for middle school kids. In a sense, it assumes that they know the references, right? That they might even get some of these jokes. Are you hoping for that?
I am hoping for that. I frequently have been known to write in jokes for adults in the books because I have had so many parents come up to me at signings and conventions and go, I read these to my child every night. And then they give me this dead look and I'm like, oh, I feel the need to apologize. So I write in jokes so that they will also be amused sometimes. And mostly my editor lets me get away with it. I managed to sneak a Dune joke into the current manuscript. I'm so proud.
is this easier? This book's got a lot of words in it, not so many pictures. How'd that go?
I like writing words over drawing pictures because it's so much faster. If I want to say there's a chicken in a field, it takes me about 3 seconds to type that and about 20-30 minutes to draw it, depending on how complicated the chicken is. So writing goes faster.
A word is worth 1,000 pictures, I guess.
Yeah, but the picture takes 1,000 times longer to draw.
Today, I am talking with author Ursula Vernon. Her new book is called Castle Hangnail, and we're having that conversation right here on The State of Things. A lot of animals in your work. Growing up, did you just doodle and draw a little bit?
I did a lot. And every time I did, my mother would tell me I could be an artist and then I would stop immediately.
Nice.
But yeah, and we also had a lot of animals growing up, so I was exposed to a lot. I've always liked animals.
Now that your mom has seen this work, she had aspirations for you as an artist, and you're doing these dragons and sweaters and T-shirts. How does she feel about it all?
She is very proud of it. The days when she was getting an MFA and it was fine art or the highway are long past. And so she finds them delightful, and also they pay the bills. So.
Well, this is not your only artistic endeavor, though it's both writing and drawing. You also have you're doing podcasts, right? One
Yes.
called The Hidden Almanac. Can you tell us about it?
The Hidden Almanac started actually public radio was partly responsible.
Don't blame us.
there's a really wonderful podcast out there called Welcome to Night Vale, which is very famous. And people kept telling me I should listen to it and saying it's like Prairie Home Companion in an H.P. Lovecraft setting. And I listened to it and I said, you guys have not listened to enough Prairie Home Companion. it is nothing like that. And this is like small college radio or something. And anyway, if you were going to do a strange, dark version of a Garrison Keillor thing, you would do the Writer's Almanac. And then I was trapped. And so I started writing this alternate history. So it's three times a week. It's 3 to 5 minutes long. It's this very somber-voiced narrator. But it's an alternate history where very strange things are going on. And it includes a feast day of a saint, which I was raised Catholic, and I make up a lot of saints. And garden advice, which is questionable.
Well, here's a sample of that very podcast.
Welcome to the Hidden Almanac. I'm Rowan Board. Today is April 27th, 2015. It was on this day that the naturalist Elon the Younger documented the extraordinary defense mechanisms of the exploding plover. Much like killdeer, exploding plovers will often try to lead predators away from the nest by feigning a broken wing.
There we go. A clip from the podcast, I should say, Hidden Almanac. No, that was not Garrison Keillor, though it may have sounded like it for just a moment. Created by my guest, Ursula Vernon, the writer who is based in Pittsburgh and whose latest book is called Castle Hangnail. You do those, what, three times a week?
Three times a week. And the narrator is my husband, Kevin Sunny, is the voice of Reverend Mord. And you can find it at HiddenAlmanac.com if you want to know more about the lifestyle of the exploding plover.
Yeah.
And so I make up a lot of very strange animals.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the natural world because I work in radio. But if is there an exploding plover?
There is not.
Did you make that thing? You made that up,
right? I made that up, yes. As far as I know, there are very few animals whose defense mechanism is to explode when predators come near them.
Well, you never – the name that they give these birds, you just never know. You remember the George Carlin newscaster, he said a small dog exploded on a crowded street today. Anyway, and you've got another podcast that where you drink beer and eat
yes,
food.
The one that small children should probably not listen to.
Right.
Yes.
So you do it all. You do it all. Yes. This is wonderful stuff. Thank you so much for being with us today, Ursula.
Thank you for having me.
Ursula Vernon, you can find out more about her book, Castle Hangnail, at our website, stateofthings.org. It's a program that is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Our intern is Jess Clark. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.